This is Julian Pleasants, and I am in Lake City, and I am speaking today with Mr. Herbert Pepper. It's September the 28th, and the year is 2005. Tell me where you were born and where you grew up.
I was born in Cleveland, Georgia, on March 12, 1919.
And did you grow up most of your childhood in?
Well, I was 12 years old and moved out to Gainesville, to Jefferson, Georgia.
Right.
And then to Douglasville, Georgia.
And how far did you go in school?
I went through the ninth grade. And when I come back from overseas, I took the GED test and got my high school diploma.
Well, good. Now, talk about when you joined the armed forces and why.
Well, I was classified by the 1A with the draft, and I decided I'd volunteer and enlist. So I was in Charlotte, North Carolina, and went down and enlisted, and they had two openings, one for Savannah, Georgia at Hunter Field, and one in Panama. I said, I'll take Hunter Field. So I went to Hunter Field in Savannah, Georgia.
And what branch of service?
It was the Army Air Corps at the time.
Yeah.
And I was in the Ordnance Department.
Okay.
And it was the 27th Bomb Group.
And then you did your training in Savannah?
There in Savannah.
And what kind of training did you have when you were in Ordnance? What specifically was your specialty?
Nothing much, just to learn how to field strip your 45 automatic and and the other stuff that you had to do. We had no extensive training. I think it was 2 weeks they call it boot camp now, but I think it's had 2 weeks of training.
And what year was this?
1941, May of 1941.
So this is before Pearl Harbor?
Yes. Okay. May 3rd of 1941, I went in service. In October of 41, we loaded up all of our equipment and stuff and headed for San Francisco. And on November the 1st, we left San Francisco, got in the Philippines on November the 20th. Then the war started in December.
You thought you were pretty safe over there, didn't you?
Yeah.
Well, as everybody knows, on December the 7th, the Japanese, of course, attacked Manila and Corregidor at the same time that they attacked Pearl Harbor. What were you doing when the attack came?
I think I was stationed at Clark Field in the Philippines.
And so when the attack came over, what was your reaction to it? I mean, surely you were, I'm sure, surprised.
Yeah, surprised, and I hit the foxhole.
First thing.
And they said one day they come out and said that, see, the Japs destroyed all of our planes the first day because they were marked, had them marked. And so we had no planes to put our bombs and ammunition on. So we just had to wait, you know, till we got orders to go from there to Bataan. And that's when one time they come in there and they said that the Jap paratroopers were coming in. But we were not a combatant outfit, so we had no firearms. And they said, well, we're going to have to give you some if them paratroopers come in. Had all these old infield rifles and Cosmoline. It'd been there ever since World War One. We'd been sitting there cleaning them if the Jap paratroopers had to come in. But they didn't come in. Then when they evacuated into Bataan, it was down there on the Bataan Peninsula close to Marvellous, and we wasn't doing any fighting because we didn't have anything to fight with. We were just going down there to stay till whatever happened come about.
Now, I understand that the attack at Clark Field was pretty deadly, and the planes kept coming over and kept coming over and kept bombing. And was there any response at all from the military? I mean, I guess a couple of people had rifles and could fire back, but...
No, they didn't. Some of the P-40s got off the ground, and some of them didn't. And they went up, but one come back in, he overshot the field and hit into the jungle there.
So you spent the whole time in a foxhole?
Most of the time. Yeah. During air raids.
Yeah. And this went on for, a couple of days?
Yeah. And then they said they were, the Japanese Army was supposed to be coming that way, so we evacuated into Bataan and stayed down there till the surrender. And General MacArthur, when he left, he said, do not surrender, fight to the last man. Well, General King was left in charge of Bataan, and Wainwright was over in Craigador.
Right.
So General King went through the lines and surrendered to the Japs. Said he wasn't going to be responsible for everybody just annihilated, you know, because we had nothing to fight with anymore. And he surrendered. So the Bataan Death March started a day or so after he surrendered.
Now, were you under King's command as opposed to Wainwright?
Yes.
Now, Wainwright also surrendered a little later, although they held out.
Months later,
yeah. Yeah, they held out 148 days. So they were in Corregidor as a fortress, so they were able to hold out. But King surrendered
first. Yeah.
Right. And so how many people were in this group that were surrendered by
them? They said about 20,000.
20,000. Okay, and tell me what happened at that point. Once you had surrendered to the Japanese.
Well, they made us go down to Marvellous and line up on the airstrip down there. And then we got orders, you know, to start the march. So we started the Bataan Death March out of Marvellous.
Mm-hmm.
And along the road, the Japanese had their field artillery on one of the airstrips up there. And they were going to march us down in front of their guns. So if Craigador fired back, see, they'd hit us. So just about the time, we was marching a column of fours, about the time they said, turn the left and go down that way, Craigador fired. And a shell come, didn't miss me very far, but it came in at an angle and just sit on the road and scooted down the road. Didn't go off. And we just did about face and went on up that road. We didn't go down there in front of them guns.
Yeah, that's what they thought. That would be easier to get you killed right away with American guns.
Yeah. And on the way, let's see, I think we had one meal on the 65-mile march. And they wouldn't let you get water, nothing. So one time, along the, when they have artesian wells in the Philippines along the road, we'd just make a column and go around and fill our canteen. Well, they'd shoot over your head. Well, sometimes they just a different guard, see. Some of them, they got killed going and getting water. And I broke out of line one time, and I wasn't even thinking what I was doing, because I headed to the sugarcane field. It's just so the guard didn't see me. And I got me some sugar cane. And talk about picking up your energy, that juice would pick it up.
That may have been the difference between surviving and not surviving.
It was, yes.
Well, now, when you were first captured, the story has always been that the Japanese, who with the Bushido code fight to the death, that they saw you as inferior because you had surrendered.
Yeah.
Did you understand that that was their attitude toward you?
No, I didn't. They didn't. But I knew that they killed a lot of them on the death march. And if you fell out the end of the line, that's where you stayed.
Now, it was very hot.
Very hot.
And there was no real protection.
No.
You had no food.
No food.
And you had no water.
No water.
A lot of people had dysentery and were already sick.
Yeah. Dysentery and beriberi and whatever.
Yeah.
And malaria.
And so as you marched along, how did you deal with the fact that you had to survive? What kept you going?
I just had the determination to keep going, and I wasn't going to let them get me down. And some of them would give up while they didn't survive.
Well, do you think that they were trying to humiliate you and force you to give up? Or did you see this as they were trying to kill you?
Well, they didn't try to kill you. That's what it's called a death march, because they killed so many on that march.
Now, when you first got captured and you started on this march, what did you expect was going to happen to you? I mean, were you aware of how long the march was going to be?
No.
I mean, what was going through your mind?
Well, we didn't even know where we was going or how long it'd take to get there.
So they told you absolutely nothing?
Nothing. They told you nothing. Then they marched us all the way to San Fernando, then put us in a freight car and rode on up to O'Donnell.
Yeah, O'Donnell first.
O'Donnell was the first camp.
Yeah. Now, as you're going through the 65 miles, that took you, what, 4 days?
Yeah.
How many would have died along the way? I guess that you started with, what, 20,000?
Yeah, there's about, I think they estimated 5,000 or so died on the march.
On the march.
Yeah.
Were most of them killed by the Japanese, or they just fall out because of...
Well, most of them were killed by the Japanese.
Did you see them do any beheading with the swords?
No, I didn't see. I saw them stick a bayonet in a Filipino boy. He was, this Filipino boy, he was going to cook him some rice there one night where we stopped. And the Jap guard come by and kicked his fire out and told him no cooking. So when he left, he built his fire back up, started cooking his rice. He come back this time, he hit him in the back of the head with his rifle butt, and when he fell on the ground, he stuck his bayonet in it. So he killed him right there because they told him not to be cooking.
Did you understand what they were telling you? I mean, did some of them speak English? How did you know what the commands were?
Well, some of them could speak English, but not many of them.
Did you have any Japanese at all?
No.
So you had no way of knowing?
No.
What they would do? They could demonstrate to you back into line.
Didn't understand anything.
What was the hardest part of the march for you? Was it being without food, water, just the distance?
Yeah. Without the food and the water, and having malaria, and that was the biggest problem.
So you got weaker and weaker, every day,
yeah.
And that's what was happening. People were just falling out of the ranks.
A lot of them were, yes.
Did you try to help some of them keep going?
Yeah, I had one of my boys in my outfit. I'd make him get up ahead of the column, and I said, then you can slow down till you get to the back, but don't be caught at the rear end and everybody else gone, because they'll kill you then. And that's what they'd do if you fell out on the side, they'd just kill you.
Would they shoot you or bayonet you?
Bayonet you most of the time.
Yeah. That must be pretty painful to see your buddies being killed as you're marching along. Did that give you more incentive to survive?
Yeah.
You know, they're not going to get me.
It sure did.
Where do you think that comes from? I mean, some people give up, some people survive. What is it in an individual?
I don't know. They just don't have the determination.
And where does that determination come from?
I don't know.
Is it religious? Is it loyalty to your country? Is it loyalty to your comrades?
Well, that and then wanting to get back home.
Mainly get back home.
Yeah.
Now, as you went through this process, by the time you got to Camp O'Donnell, there were probably about 15,000 left. What were the conditions like at Camp O'Donnell?
Oh, it's terrible. There's no, they did have a little water, and they didn't feed you very much, and because they didn't expect, they weren't prepared to accept as many prisoners as they had. And they was dying there. I don't know, it's 27,000 Filipinos died there in the 4 months time. And I don't know how many Americans, it was about 4,000 or 5,000 or more. And then they started shipping them out on work details. And I got sent to Clark Field on a work detail, and I was there for a few months.
What did you do on that work detail?
Keep the runways fixed. And I got the beriberi in my feet and couldn't hardly walk around, so they sent me to Manila to the Bilibid Hospital. And I was in Manila in the Bilibid Hospital 3 or 4 months. And then they shipped me to Cabana de Juan.
Well, that's the fact that you were in the hospital that time probably saved you.
Yeah.
Because if you'd had to be out working and not getting very much food, it would have just made you weaker and weaker, I presume.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, let me go back a couple of things on the march. Another individual I talked to said this. He said, they had no sympathy, no concern for us as human beings, no burials. They treated us like animals.
Yeah, they did.
Is that accurate?
That's right.
And when you stayed in Belanga, you in this big warehouse when you stopped at Belanga on the way?
No, I wasn't.
You didn't stop there?
No.
I guess some of them did.
Yeah.
Another thing that he was telling me, that to keep the line moving, they'd get the bayonets and kind of prod people,
yeah,
and threaten them and to keep the line moving. And that's something that I guess was constant.
It was.
So you were harassed.
Yeah, harassed the whole way.
Yeah. And you didn't let that get you down. Some people,
no, I didn't.
Some people said that gave them more incentive.
Yeah.
Because they mistreated them so badly, they were going to show the Japanese that they were tough and they were going to survive. Now, when you got to Camp O'Donnell, and at the beginning, I think there must have been something like 40,000 people there. I mean, they certainly couldn't take care of them.
No,
any medical care when you first got to O'Donnell?
No, we had the doctors, but the Japanese wouldn't give them any medical, no medicine at all. You could go home sick, call, but it didn't do you any good because they didn't have any medicine at all.
And I understand that since so many people had dysentery, that the latrine was just horrible.
Yeah.
It was just,
yeah.
So you would just have to go 5 or 6 times a night. Did you get dysentery?
Yeah.
And you were up all night having to go?
I was glad when they sent me out on a work field because that was a filthy place there.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. In this situation, the germs are everywhere, so they're infecting more and more people every day. I talked to another individual who had a difficult job. His job was a burial detail.
Yeah.
And so every day he'd have to come in and take his comrades and take them out and bury them.
Yeah.
And I can imagine every day when you'd get up in the morning, there would be another 10 or 15 dead who died during the night.
Yeah.
How did you deal with the death of your good friend, comrade?
Well, I tried not to let it bother me, because I mean, I didn't dwell on any of that stuff. I'd make up my mind on something else. That helped me get through there too.
He said he put on a plate of mental armor. He just shut it all out.
Yeah.
Because if he had to deal with the horror, he didn't think he could make it, because he was burying dead comrades all day long. That's all he was doing. And if you let that get you, you'd just be completely overwhelmed.
Yeah, I didn't let it bother me.
Yeah. Now, once you got through with Camp O'Donnell. Then you went back to where you started, to Clark Field.
Clark Field on the work detail.
Let me ask you about O'Donnell. Where did you stay? What kind of facilities were there? How much food did you get?
And I didn't get very much food at all. And there wasn't very many buildings there, so you could sleep right out on the ground.
And what would they feed you when they did feed you?
Rice.
What, cup a day or something like that?
About that much, yeah.
And you can't survive on that?
No.
And if you had a specific problem, could you go to the Japanese and say, look, I've got beriberi, and can you take care of me?
No, they didn't care about it.
No, so no. There was no appeal to them.
Went to the American doctor.
Yeah, so you had several of those?
Yeah.
And they didn't have any medicine, of course.
No, but they'd try to get it, and they wouldn't.
Yeah.
One doctor, I don't recall his name, but he went every day trying to get medicine, and they beat him up every day he come, too. Then they finally give up. He kept going back, and they finally give him what he wanted.
Really?
Yeah.
I think most people would have given up after you got beaten up two or three times.
That they thought he'd break him from coming to asking for the medicine, but he kept going.
Well, that's part of what made people survive as well. He could overcome all that horror and all that torture that he had. Did they actually torture people?
Yeah, but I never saw much of that because I was always away from some of it. But
and I understand that the one thing that was important about Camp O'Donnell, you didn't want anybody to notice you. You didn't want to be at the first of the line. You didn't want to be at the end of the line.
Yeah.
You know, you just wanted to be sort of anonymous so they wouldn't pick you out.
That's me. I got in between all that.
So you were very careful about what you did and where you went.
Yeah. Stay away from them guards.
Yeah. Because they're, I understand, pretty capricious. They would wave to you one time and shoot you the next time.
Yeah, that's right.
So you had no way of guessing how they would do. Were there any guards that were sympathetic at all?
There were some. But if they got caught, they'd get it. There on the Clark Field detail, this one young soldier, he was sympathetic. And they caught him one day as talking to some of the prisoners and wasn't abusing them at all. They strapped a machine gun on his back and made him run till he fell on his face. And I never seen him anymore. I don't know if they took him out of that camp or not.
They might have killed him.
Might have.
Yeah. Did you ever think about escaping from O'Donnell?
No, because I didn't know where to go.
Yeah. And also, I understand that they would say if one person escaped, then they would kill 5 people or 10 people for everyone who escaped.
They put them in 10-man squad.
Yeah.
One of them escaped, they shot the other 9.
Right.
And if they're in the building where you slept, if one escaped, they took 4 off one side and 5 off the other side and execute them.
And they were very prompt about doing that.
They did, yes.
Did you see any of these executions? Were they public?
No.
But you knew they'd been killed. Now, go to Clark Field and talk to me about the conditions there. Were the conditions a lot better than at O'Donnell?
Oh, yeah, a lot better.
How much food did you get there?
Very little. Mostly rice.
But you had to work a full day?
Yeah.
Where did you sleep?
In the old barracks. They had the old barracks.
So you're back in the same barracks you've been in before?
Yeah.
And how did you feel about helping the Japanese? I mean, you were improving the landing field for the Japanese.
Well, I did the little as I could because I didn't want to do anything that would help them instead of the American coming back. Because I told them one time, after I got to Japan working in the coal mine, and so the civilians were over us in the mine. The soldiers stayed up topside. And they wanted you to work fast. I mean, he grabbed my shovel when I was shoveling coal one day, and he just started And he said, that's the way he wanted me to work. I says, every time I put a shovel of coal out, that keeps Uncle Sam away that much longer. And boy, they got me.
What'd they do to you then?
They beat me. I grabbed one of those Japs down there one time because he come at me with his, he carried a riding quirt with him all the time. And when he come at me, because I wasn't work, let everybody else sit down and rest, and he wanted me to keep working, but I wouldn't do it. Well, he come after me. And when he raised it up there, I grabbed him. Both arms went in. And they turned me in to the jail guards out up south side. They made me bend over and they used a pine pole on my back. And I mean, they beat me for 10 or 15 minutes there. And I couldn't very well get around for 3 weeks. But I didn't let them beat me down. If they beat you down, they kill you.
Yeah. Let me go back to talking about that. Another individual said that they would sometimes put people on a rack and stretch them.
Yeah.
That they would make them swallow salt water, and they would, you know, and they'd fill up their stomach, and then they'd hit their stomachs and make them keep doing that.
Yeah.
Did you see any of that?
No, I didn't see any of that.
But you heard about it?
Yes. Because there's a different bunch of guards in the different places they were.
Well, one of the worst things that this guy Lester Tenney, who wrote a book about this, said that they would take the bamboo and tie it around his testicles and let it dry, because the bamboo would dry, and it would get tight. And he said it was just like being castrated.
Yeah.
He said the pain was horrible and that they had no willingness to give him any relief at all. You know, they just dismissed it.
Yeah.
And so I think, without knowing specifically, that if you kind of fought back, if you demonstrated a certain toughness, they kind of respected that.
Yeah, some of them did, yeah.
You know, because one of the things they disliked about people who had surrendered is that they were cowards.
Yeah.
And so they didn't have any respect for them.
Yeah.
But if you survived and sort of fought back, without going too far, obviously,
yeah,
it was a thin line. You wouldn't want to attack a soldier, I wouldn't imagine.
No.
A civilian, you might get away with a beating, but...
Well, I didn't get away with that, grabbing that bus civilian.
Now, what about when you were at this work detail? How that lasted, what, 4 months?
Yeah, I think it was.
And then you got Beriberi?
Beriberi.
And they sent you to the hospital?
In Manila, at Bilibid.
And wasn't that kind of unusual that they would send you to get medical care?
Yeah, because they usually didn't put up with it, because most of the time they'd kill them.
Because they were no good, they couldn't work?
No.
So why do you think you got to go to a hospital?
I don't know, really, because the way they'd been treating everybody, I didn't know if I'd make it there or not.
But did they give you pretty good medical care?
Pretty good, not well, much as they could. They had one Navy doctor, he did pretty good with the people, if he could get the medication.
So the doctors were allied doctors as opposed to Japanese doctors?
Yeah.
Were there any nurses, staff people?
No,
just doctors.
Just doctors.
And these were all allied prisoners?
Yeah.
And so when you got better, then they sent you to Cobanjuan?
Yes.
And how did you get from the hospital to that camp?
I think it was on a truck or train. Well, the train went up that way. I guess it was on the train.
And that took what? A week or so?
No, it didn't take that long to get up from Manila to Cabanduan. A couple of days or so.
A couple of days. And what were the conditions like in that camp?
Well, to start with, it's pretty good. Then it got worse. That was in a farm. They had a farm there. Everybody worked on the farm and was able to work.
And what would you raise? What kind of crops?
It had sweet potatoes and tomatoes and beans and radishes, all that stuff.
And that's what you would eat, or did that go to the Japanese?
Most of it went to the Japanese.
You didn't get to see too much of it.
But no, they better not even catch you eating any of it out on the farm when you was working there.
So you couldn't put any in your pocket or anything? And what was the medical care like at Cabanatuan?
Well, I got no medical care. I don't know about the others, but it wasn't anything.
And you were in, I guess, in open barracks?
Yes.
And so you had a cot to sleep on?
That was a bamboo that they made.
Just on the floor?
Yes.
Yeah. And you would have to work how many hours a day?
At 8 to 10.
So you worked from dawn to dusk?
Yeah.
You couldn't see anymore?
Yeah.
And how much food did you get there?
Very little.
Same kind of thing?
Yeah.
Bowl of rice a day, maybe?
Yeah. they did let people send out to, you know, if you had any money, you could buy stuff, and they'd send out. I don't know who they went outside to bring stuff in, but they'd go in out and bring stuff in there, and a lot of times I'd get peanuts.
So you had some money?
Yeah, a little bit.
Yeah. And did you give that money to the guards?
No, I give it to the person that has ordered the stuff that come in.
So that was an American?
Yeah.
And there were British troops there as well?
Not in there, not where I was.
Okay. All Americans?
Yeah.
How many?
I don't know exactly. It must have been 2,000 or 3,000 at the time.
Yeah, that's sort of the general figure that I've read as well.
Yeah.
And so if you had stayed there, would you have survived the war?
I don't really know if I would have or not. Probably wouldn't, because the way the things were getting to be.
Getting worse.
Yeah, getting worse.
Now, what did you know, or what did you hear about the war itself? Did you know anything that was going on in the war, how the war was progressing?
Never heard anything.
What was your long-term view? Did you expect the Allies to win the war and that they would come and rescue you, or how did you look at the future?
Yeah, I always had good hope that they'd be coming.
Although from where you were, you were in such an isolated spot.
Yeah.
It could not have been a very bright future at that point. And this, at Cabanatuan, were the Japanese brutal? Did they torture you? Were they better than they had been at Camp
Lejeune? Better than they had been, because they wanted you to work.
Yeah. Now, at what point did you... Oh, you were not there when the rescue of Cabanatuan
came. No, I was in Japan.
Okay, when did you leave Cabanatuan?
In July of 43.
And did they tell you why?
No, it's just said go take you to Japan to work up there.
How many went with you?
500 in the group I was in.
And so they would put you back on the train and take you back to Manila?
No, yeah, and get on
and
the
put
boat.
You on a ship?
Yeah.
Well, I heard the ships were terrible.
They were. You get down in a hole there and you wasn't supposed to get out. It was awful down in there.
And there was no toilets, there was no fresh air,
no
water, no food.
No.
So 500 people or more, I guess, on the ships were just down there for what, 7 or 8 days?
Yeah, that's something, August, July, is it? So July we left the Philippines and got in Japan in August. And it was 2 or 3 or 4 weeks there.
You would see the whole time.
Yeah.
Now, there were examples, obviously not your case, that some Allied planes sank some of those ships, attacked some of those ships, not knowing that American prisoners were on board.
That was later on in the war.
Yeah, so you didn't, that's right. 43 would have been too soon for that, yeah. So you survived that trip without too much difficulty?
Yeah.
How many would have died on board?
Didn't any of them die on this group I was in? because we all, the 500 made it. That was a 500. It was in the camp up there in Japan, in Camp 17.
At this point, how much did you weigh?
About 125 or 30 pounds.
And what had you weighed when you went into the
175.
Service?
175.
So you were pretty much lost a third of your weight, or a quarter of your weight, hadn't
yeah.
you? Did that make you a lot weaker?
Oh, yeah.
Now, I mentioned beriberi. Did you have the dry beriberi or the
wet? I had both.
You had both.
The dry was the pains.
Yeah,
and the wet was
just
a swelling.
Because you too much fluid, you retained all the fluid.
Yeah, that was the wet beriberi.
Yeah.
But I had the dry, and then my feet.
I understand the pain is horrible.
Oh, it is.
And there's not much really you can do about it.
No. They tell me nothing, and I still have it.
You still have those recurring pains?
Yeah.
When you got to Japan, what did you think at that point? So when you get to the ship, now you're in Japan, and obviously the chance of rescue would have been a lot better in the Philippines than in Japan. Did you think that you were going to be there forever?
Well, we just didn't think about being rescued, because we figured the war would have to be over before we got.
Yeah. But did you assume that you might be there for years and years?
Yeah.
What was your job when you first got to, that would have been Camp 17?
Camp 17, yeah. Down in the coal mine.
Yeah.
Shoveling coal out.
Talk a little bit about that experience. You would go up in the beginning of the day, and you would literally mine coal in what I understand was a pretty unsafe environment.
It was a condemned coal mine. It was condemned in 1936 by American engineers. They didn't care about it coming down on us or whatever happened.
Now, at Camp 17, there would have been some other nationalities as well, right? There would have been some Australians.
We got some English and Dutch and some Australians come in later, mm-hmm. along about 44, 45, somewhere around there. They wasn't there the whole time we were.
And you were there for what? Year and a half?
2 years.
2 years. Somebody did a study and discovered that Australians and the British survived these ordeals better than the Americans.
Yeah.
Why do you think that was?
I don't really know, but...
Is that true in your experience?
Yeah. So some of those Dutchmen, they tried to pass themselves off as Americans, but the Japanese knew different. They work them over good, too.
And so when you worked, did you work in a group that had the same makeup all the time?
Yeah.
So you had a group of how many people would work in the mines?
Let's see, I think it's about 10 in my group. And
so the same group would work every day?
Every day.
And you were under civilian control while you were actually in the mines?
Yeah, yeah.
And how difficult, I know from talking to other people that the all that black bituminous
coal dust
all day long really affected your lungs.
Yeah, because you had no protection.
And you mentioned that you had incipient tuberculosis when you left. Do you think it was caused by your work in the mine?
I think so.
Were you aware of that at the time?
I wasn't aware of it until I got back to the States.
And some people have argued that having to actually go to work every day, even in the coal mines, you had physical exertion and that helped you survive.
Yeah.
You had to just sit around all day.
Yeah.
It would be better like working on the farm. At least you were out in the fresh air and you could at least get some healthy exercise. I mean, this is not in the coal mines, but in the farm. So when you were working with the civilians, I understand that some of them could be a little kind to the people, or less vicious than the guards.
Yeah, but and they so had to be watched because they couldn't let the guards know.
Yeah, so you had to you had to make your arrangements with them.
Yeah.
Did you ever try to trade for cigarettes or food or anything like that?
Yeah.
Would you trade with the civilians?
No, with each.
With the other prisoners?
Other prisoners.
So you never tried to make a deal with the guards or with the civilians? No.
They gave us some old cigarettes that they made. I don't know what they was made out of, but I'd trade my cigarettes off for food because I didn't smoke
then. Well, the thing that amazed me, and I've talked to several people who were in exactly the same camp you were, they said people would trade their food for these cigarettes and literally were committing suicide.
Yeah.
Because they weren't eating and they were smoking. And I guess the cigarette somehow helped you get through the horrors of being a prisoner. Did you have everyday meals served to you? Did you have a cafeteria? Where did you?
Well, they had a mess hall.
Mess hall. Yeah. And there's this story, a famous story at this mess hall, maybe not the one you were at, that there was an American in charge of that who fed all of his buddies.
Yeah.
Is that a true story?
Well, yeah.
There must have been a lot of anger at him.
Oh, yeah. He was a lieutenant in the Navy. Little. His name was Little.
Yeah. And so he would take the extra food and give it to his buddies and take it out of the mouths of some of the other people who were not connected with him.
Yeah.
I would imagine that would have been something that everybody probably still angry about. But one person mentioned that when they were finally liberated, that they were going after him.
Yeah, and couldn't find him though.
That's right, he'd already left, hadn't he?
Yeah.
But there were several people who apparently had in mind to get their revenge.
Yeah.
And also in these places, there's always somebody who is into the black market, who can trade cigarettes food for a blanket, or, you know, somehow or another they can they're just good businessmen, I guess. Did you see a lot of that?
Yeah.
Were you resentful of those kinds of people?
No, I didn't pay no attention to them.
Some of them got pretty wealthy.
Yeah.
Making life and death decisions. I mean, giving some people rice and selling it. I mean, imagine selling rice to people who would otherwise starve to death. That's pretty low, isn't it?
Yeah, it is.
But the person getting the rice would be glad to see it, wouldn't
it? Yeah.
Now, when you were working here, did you ever try to any sabotage or try to destroy the mine or?
Yeah, used to sabotage the jackhammer.
What would you do?
I'd pour sand in it.
Well, what would they say? They didn't know who did it.
No, they got me one time when they caught me doing it.
What did they do?
They gave me a good beating.
And they would not beat you so bad you couldn't work, but beat you enough so you wouldn't do it again.
Well, that one time they beat me so bad I couldn't work.
But they didn't have any desire to kill you at that point.
No.
Did you have a bento box? You remember a bento box? Where you would keep all your whatever valuables you had?
No, I didn't.
Didn't have one of those. Some people kept one of those.
Yeah.
Yeah. When you went to sleep at night, what did you dream about?
Food.
Food. Always food?
Always food.
What kind of food?
Just anything. Big banquets. They just have tables full of food.
Fried chicken. And
yeah, everything.
Did it make you sad?
No.
Did you dream of folks back home?
Never did.
Never did?
No.
Always food?
Always food.
No girls?
No.
End of tape A, side one. The interview continues on tape A, side two.
When you were in the mines, I'm aware of individuals who would literally break their own bones to get out of work. Did you see some of that?
Yeah. One boy tried to get me to break his arm, and I wouldn't do it.
But they would get somebody. Somebody would, I've heard of a case, they just put their arm down, somebody would take a big mallet and just smash their arm.
Yeah.
And so what would that would get them out of the mines?
Yeah, get them out of work in a while, yeah.
But eventually they have to come back.
Well, one of our own told the Japs what was happening. Japs thought it was accidents, but one of our own soldiers told the Japs that it was not an accident, so they was doing it. So when it got so much, they told them, says, anybody comes in with a broken leg, we cut it off. If you broke your arm, you cut it off. And that stopped it, see.
I would think so. Wow. That's pretty desperate to have to do that, isn't
yeah.
it? Did you ever even think about doing
no.
it?
No.
Do you think that as the war was winding down, now you of course wouldn't know this,
no,
but the Japanese would. Did their attitude change at all?
No.
Even though at some point they knew they were probably going to lose the war?
Yeah.
They never changed their attitude?
No, they didn't even tell us when they dropped the bomb.
Now, one person told me that from Camp 17, he could see the blast at Nagasaki. Is that right?
Well, I was in the mine when it went off. When it come up the top, the mushroom cloud was floating by the camp. And because there's a mountain in between us and the Nagasaki. And if there was any shock of anything, it went up when he hit that mountain, went up.
But he said he could see that big mushroom cloud.
Yeah.
Now, did you know what that was?
No.
Had no idea.
Nobody
talked about it at all.
No, they didn't say nothing.
No.
Them Japanese went to the bottom of that mine after they dropped them bombs.
Is that right? They figured that's the safest place.
Yeah.
They put you up and they went down.
Yeah.
Let you take all the bad here. Now, ultimately, you will be liberated when and by whom?
Well, the soldiers come in on the 13th of September. See, the war was over on the 15th of August. And then we waited, this liberating party got in. And I got sick and couldn't leave the camp. They said if you go down to the end of the island, you could catch a ride out on the planes that the engineers bringing stuff in and going out empty. Some of them did, but I got sick and couldn't go. I mean, it was the 16th of September before I got out of that camp.
And how did you get out?
They put us on a train and went around to Nagasaki and got on a boat in Nagasaki.
Did you get to see the devastation of the bomb when you were in Nagasaki?
Yeah, I saw what it did, yeah.
Must have been extraordinary.
Huh? Yeah.
Hard to imagine one bomb could do that kind of damage.
That's right, yeah.
How did you feel about the dropping of the bombs? You think that was the right thing to do?
I think it was. If it hadn't been, I wouldn't be here.
Every veteran I talked to thinks it was a good idea, right?
Because they had our execution date set for August the 29th if there was an invasion.
So they would have killed you?
Yeah. All prisoners would have been executed if there had been an invasion.
And you were aware they had told you that?
No, I didn't find that out.
Till later?
Till afterwards.
Okay. So what kind of illness did you have at the end?
I had the TB and the beriberi.
And did they give you medical care when the Americans came in to liberate the camp?
When I had so they didn't tell me it was TB then, but I got sick, you know, and the doctor kept going to the Japs to get something for medication, so. And they give them 9 sulfur tablets. And they said, that's all you're gonna get. Said you can give this to him and he can live or die. So the sulfur tablets got me where I could, the pleurisy that I had was doing pains a bit. I didn't find out I had the TB till I got on the ship when they x-rayed me.
And so you got a train from Nagasaki, where did they take you?
I had a train from Omuda, town where the mine was.
Okay.
Around to Nagasaki.
Oh, okay.
And got on a boat there. Well, I got on a British boat, and they took me down to Okinawa and dropped me off.
And then you were at an American hospital.
Yeah, an American hospital from there on in. Come in, island hop to the Philippines. And I was in the Army Hospital in the Philippines from September to October. They forgot we were there. All everybody had left except a certain group. And they thought, well, the commander thought everybody had already been sent back to the States. And this one boy, he took up everybody's name and went and gave it to him. He said, I thought you'd already gone. Well, they had a plane ready for us in another day. And did island hopping all the way back.
And where did you come into, San Francisco?
San Francisco in the Letterman General Hospital.
And then you stayed there how long?
I didn't stay there but a week or so, or at least, it wasn't a week. I don't think I stayed there a week. And they sent me to Santa Fe, New Mexico, in the Army Hospital there.
Hmm.
And I stayed there.
Because that was a TB center?
Yeah.
Okay.
And I stayed there in Santa Fe about three or four months. And then they sent me to Swannanoa, North Carolina.
Near Asheville.
Yeah. And I was there till I was discharged.
And when was that?
1946. I got my discharge. They mailed it to me. I had home on leave, and they mailed my discharge to me. December 25th, 1946. That's my discharge date.
Wow. So you were in the hospital at Swannanoa for quite a while, weren't you?
13 months.
So all together, when you left Camp 17, it was almost a year and 2 months.
Yeah.
Where you were either on the route or in hospitals.
I was in hospitals, yeah.
So you must have been pretty sick.
Yeah.
At the end there.
TB in me.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's amazing that not only can you overcome
and malnutrition, yes.
All of that.
Malnutrition and all that stuff.
It just wore. How much did you weigh when they got you out?
125 pounds.
So you'd maintain your weight.
Yeah.
Pretty good through the end of it. Did you feel when you left the camp that you wanted revenge on the Japanese?
No, I didn't. I was just going to forget all about all that stuff.
Some people forgot it. Some people wanted to get the guards. And
well,
I guess everybody had a different reaction.
I made up my mind to forget everything I could because I didn't want it to run me crazy.
Well, that's right. That's what it'll do.
It did a lot of.
Oh yeah. Have you had nightmares or?
Oh yeah. And for years I had them.
How did you deal with that?
I just pass it on.
Did you have any other physical ailments that have restricted you over the years that you developed in the war?
Well, I
still got your pain from beriberi.
And well, now I have a arteriosclerotic heart disease.
Mm-hmm.
And
that may have come from working in the mines, you think?
Yeah, and arthritis.
Yeah.
And chronic anxiety.
Do you have that for a long time?
Yeah.
I can't imagine you not having that. When you first got back to the United States, what was your reaction? First time you set foot on American soil?
Well, I was just glad to be there.
What's the first thing you wanted to eat?
Well, they fed us too much.
You couldn't handle it. Your body was not prepared for it. No.
Every time, on the way back, every time the plane landed, we'd go to the mess hall and eat. And then the next place we landed, go to the mess hall and eat.
And of course,
all the way back to Letterman General, and that's the first thing they did was go and eat.
And of course, that food must have looked absolutely wonderful to you, huh?
But it's too much at one time, see, instead of limiting you to what you had. They let you eat all you wanted to.
That was a mistake, Your body couldn't absorb all that, no.
No. And I had problems all the time.
Yeah, your digestion and all of that would be messed up for some time, I would guess. Some guy told me the first thing he wanted was a glass of milk.
Yeah.
Maybe because that's the thing that's most unlikely for him to actually get, you know, so that everybody sort of in the back of their mind had an image of what they wanted to do when they get out. Now, what was your family situation at that time? Were you, your family was back in
Georgia.
Georgia. Did you have brothers and sisters?
Yeah, I had two brothers that both of them was in the service. And had six sisters.
So they were, your brothers were back by then? Back from the service?
Yeah.
And so you eventually got to go back and see your parents and your family?
Yeah.
And that would have been what, in December of 46 when you went on leave?
I was on leave, I went back to Santa Fe. And from there, I got a pass to go home. And I went home on leave from Santa Fe in the early.
Oh, okay, so you saw it then.
Early 46. Mm-hmm. And when I went back to the hospital, and that's when they sent me to Swannanoa.
Which was pretty close to where you needed to be, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, what about the other situation when you were getting through your service? Did you get all this back pay? Did you get your sick pay?
Yeah.
How much was that? Remember?
About $5,000, I think.
What'd you do with it?
I put it in the bank. And they bought me an automobile when they would let you.
Couldn't get one right away.
No. 50 Chevrolet, I think. I got a 50 Chevrolet. That's when I got
it. I remember those 50 Chevrolet. They had little fins in the back. Yeah. What about your life from 46 on? What did you do with the rest of your life?
Well, I went to, when I was able, I went to work with the Carolina Tree Service and worked with them. Because I'd worked with the Davie Tree Company before World War II. And when a friend of mine, he moved to Lake City, he wanted me to come down and we was going to start our own business. Well, that didn't go over. We couldn't even get started. We couldn't even get the insurance to cover. And one fella says, well, if you join the Lions Club, we'll see you get in business. That didn't sit good with me. So I went to work at the VA. Worked at the VA 29 years.
Oh, well, that's good. Did you feel at the end of the war that you were part of what Tom Brokaw called the greatest generation?
I didn't even think about it.
You just went back and went to work.
Yeah.
And you obviously got married and had a family.
Yeah.
How many children?
I have 5 children, 12 grandchildren, and 12 great-grandchildren.
Wow. That's pretty good.
Yeah.
It increases exponentially. Do you have regrets about your service at all?
No.
Are you glad you fought?
Yeah.
Would you have changed anything?
No, I wouldn't.
Do you have regrets about the loss of comrades and friends?
Oh, yeah.
Some people would tell me that the thing that most affected them was the loss of their buddies. And that the people you were with in a military environment, you know, you need them for survival. And when you lose them, it's very difficult emotionally.
On this reunion in Fontana this past August was one other boy, myself and one other boy was in my company. That's all that was there in the company. And there was the three of us that had worked in the same coal mine in Japan.
And so this reunion, which was what, last year?
Last August 28th.
There were only 12 people?
12.
How many survivors of the Bataan Death March are still alive? Do you have any idea?
I don't think there's more than 1,000.
And there would have been how many who finally survived? Out of the 20,000 who started, how many would have survived that ordeal all the way through the end of the war?
I think it's 5,000.
5,000. And that's out of 20,000.
Yeah.
That's not a lot.
No.
How would you say the war impacted your life? Did it change how you thought about the world? Did it change your values? Did it change anything?
No, it didn't at the time.
And when you look back on it, is it the most important experience of your life?
Yeah. But I want it again.
No. Everybody I talked to said, I'm glad I did it one time, but I'd better
one time.
But if we look back on all of this, I want to ask you one more time. I know this is a difficult question, but 20,000, only 5,000 survived.
Yeah.
But what do you think it was that enabled those 5,000 to survive? Now, some of it was just pure luck.
Yeah.
You know, you got the wrong guard, or you got sick at the wrong time, or
you got a
job and got out of Camp O'Donnell. So, I mean, but there has to be some other personal quality.
You had to have the determination to survive.
And you never got discouraged?
No. I kept waiting. I always was hoping they'd be here someday.
And you think in the long run that's a characteristic you'd always had?
Yeah.
Would your brothers be the same way?
I don't know.
I mean, is it sort of family thing? Is it cultural? Is it individual?
Yeah.
And again, it's interesting to me that the Brits and the Australians would have survived better than Americans. You know, I wonder why that's the case.
Cause I don't really know.
It's interesting, isn't it?
Yeah.
Are there any other stories, anything that you'd like to talk about for the record, anything we didn't cover?
I can't think right now. What if?
Would any amusing experiences ever take place? I can't imagine. Oh, somebody mentioned at one point at Camp 17 there was some entertainment that the local troops would put on a little show.
Yeah.
Did you see any of those or participate in any of those?
I didn't participate. No.
Well, I suspect that was any diversion would have been good, right?
Yeah.
Okay, is there anything else that you would like to say about the experience?
I can't recall.
Well, on that note, I want to thank you very much. I really appreciate it.